Hello and welcome. I'm Haney.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Alexander.
We are Knee Deep in Tech, covering the latest from the IT industry with a specific focus on Microsoft and how to get actual value from technology. This is episode 253, recorded on the 29th of January, 2024. You will be able to find this and our previous episodes on kneedeepintech.com, iTunes, Spotify, and on most podcasting platforms. We are here again.
We are indeed here again. But the question is, are we on most or are we on all podcasting platforms?
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
We'll have to figure out. But first, we have to say goodbye to something.
Alexander?
Yes. So, a very surprising move from Microsoft. So, DP500 was the, what was it called? The Enterprise Analyst. And at the time when it came out about a year ago, it was about two years ago. It was a pretty interesting one because it's about Synapse. It's about deeper BI knowledge. I really liked it. I, for reasons, haven't had the chance to write it. And now I don't have to because it is going the way of the dodo. It is going to go away. So Synapse is clearly no longer interesting from Microsoft's perspective, which I think is frustrating to say the least. We get a consolation prize in the shape of DP600 that you found, Haney. I mean, I mentioned it a couple of weeks back, but you have the inside line on DP600.
Yeah, so DP600 is now in beta, so it's still not, you know, well, it's still in the process of being, can I say, generally available? All right. Well, anyways, it is in beta, and it does mean you can still take it at this moment. So you can always take a beta exam as well, but you can then also leave comments to the questions. So it's an interesting thing if you ever get a chance to do a beta exam. But of course, since Fabric is, you know, pushed very hard from the Microsoft side everywhere, there is, of course, now also all these new learning initiatives about DP600. So there is currently ongoing a Microsoft Fabric Learn Together. It started already, so it is underway a little more even when this episode comes out. But there will be a new one starting in just 2-3 months as well. And it's like a 9-episode where it helps you get up to speed to the exam.
There we go.
And I do think at some point we should really talk about, like, because that is one of the ways or one of the reasons why I feel that I'm rather good at writing Microsoft exams, because I know the marketing. And then we can talk a lot about why or and how the learning and exam parts are very much related to the marketing side, which probably is the same for everything you do, all technologies, but in particular with Microsoft. And speaking about new things that probably will end up in an exam, we have had the first big service release for Intune in 2024. First and foremost, a new administrative experience is rolling out, so they are reworking the entire device part of Intune to be more easily used and being able to focus on what's really in your concern, things that should have been, in my opinion, clear from the beginning. But where I do think that Microsoft have now finally caught up with the massive growth Intune have had in the last couple of years. But there are also a lot of other changes to it that I see as really the prereqs for what will happen in 2024. So a lot of small changes, a lot of reworking with the reports and so on, that I do think is a very typical early year release for Intune and a lot of other services. They tweak, they make it look even better. They fix the small things, but they hold off on the big releases until a little later in the year. But the other most notable change here is that the packages that you can deploy with Intune for macOS has now been increased to 8 gigabytes per package, which is quite a lot in an Apple world. But speaking of that, the increase for Windows has now gone up to 30 gigs for paid customers, and that is something I haven't seen before. So if you run a trial license of Intune, you still are capped at 8 gigs, which was the former size restriction for applications that you could deploy. For paid customers, it's now 30 gigs, so you can happily deploy your Autodesk or something like that with Intune nowadays.
I was just about to ask, because I know that I have a couple of flight simulators that are in to the tune of 30 or 35 gigabytes.
Yeah.
But I would not have come up with an application in that size, but Autodesk is probably one of them, yes.
Yeah, and I do think other, like, I always remember way back in time when I worked with Config Manager, like 12, 13 years ago, and I got MATLAB in my hands, and that was ridiculously big back in the days, like 12 years ago, and you had an app that were over 3 gigs in size. So I think there are like those kinds of applications, engineering, data science, graphics, that still reaches that. But you can also think of it as, what do you want to deploy with the app? So there are outliers, but in many cases, there are other ways of deploying those as well. But there are a lot of people that have asked for this. Something we haven't asked for, because that was actually my last Microsoft-related news item for this episode. The other two things, and it's quite sad and quite fun that we released our last episode on what do you do when you're hit by a ransomware attack on the same week as the greatest attack of Swedish history, I think I have to say. Just went live.
Generally went available.
GA. Yeah, exactly. On the night between the 19th
everywhere.
And the 20th. Yeah. And I have to point out that this is a Finnish company, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those Finns that
we're
always
involved.
Claim they're so good at cybersecurity. but the consultancy and MSP TS Every were hacked just about a few weeks ago. And it's been hitting a lot of Swedish, both public and private sector, over the last weeks. Tieto has been really, really good at communicating about what's happened, the progress of it. But currently, there are still a lot of municipalities, government agencies, and private firms that are severely affected by Tieto not being up and running. But they are working constantly on restoring everything. But one of the things we talked about, and it will be very, very interesting to see how this plays out, is the time it takes to restore things.
Mm-hmm.
And we are talking about hundreds of organizations here that needs to be restored in a data center somewhere. And just the like laws of physics will really be a challenge here. And also how to prioritize. What should we restore first? Which customer is the most important? Because here you, as an example, you have a system for payout, like salary payouts, that will affect like the entire Swedish public sector if it's not up and running by like next week. But should that be prioritized higher or lower than any other thing that have been stored in the data center? Because most of them probably have the same SLA. So we will see what happens with it. But kudos to Tieto Every for working and for everyone that's involved and affected. Like keep the spirits up. And we hope that society learns from this.
A couple of notes from someone who is not very well versed in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. One is that SLAs are great in theory until the shit hits the fan and everybody finds themselves in the lifeboats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's when you're going to find out what your SLA is really, really worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting conversation in and of itself. The other part is we are now, again, seeing the consequences of putting all the eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm.
This is where things are going. In my view, it is just a question of time until a hyperscaler, Azure, AWS, GCP, Oracle, is breached on a level that has consequences for customers. And that is going to impact everything. And trust, as we've talked about, will suffer. And thirdly, I read a very, very good, I don't know, editorial, if you can call it that, on LinkedIn by someone. I forget his name, and I can't find the article again. He essentially said that it is so easy to sit at home and point fingers at Tietoevry. They are idiots. They should have, they shouldn't have put themselves into this situation. They should have been much faster. They should have been insert whatever. I had a chat with my father, who knows nothing about computers. And he said, well, isn't it kind of bad for Tietoevry to get hacked? And it is so easy to, again, point the finger and go, well, you suck. You made this happen to yourself. No, I'm pretty sure, and I think, Simon, you have more insight into this than I do. I'm pretty sure that they're pretty clever people working the cybersecurity at Tietoevry. Could they have done things better? Absolutely. Everybody can. Could they have done things worse? Oh, boy. Yes.
Yeah.
So this will happen. There will be break-ins. There will be hacks. The question is, how do you get out from underneath the mountain of crap that's going to come your way?
Yeah, and I do think, to that point, like, we can talk a bit, we will never know the full extent of this because we don't know anything about they built their infrastructure and anything like that. You could always claim why haven't they failed over? Why couldn't they do that? But again, laws of physics is one thing. And the other thing, the way organizations are buying compute today is not built to be cross-vendor, because that is, from a contract point of view, incredibly complicated. So I
not
think
to
that,
mention expensive.
Exactly. Because I do think, a lot of MSPs obviously have more than one data center. But the infrastructure is in most cases built the way that it's not just flipping a switch. You can do that if you have a lot of money and have active data centers. But most people aren't prepared to pay for that.
Yeah.
And like we have said many times, it's not a question of if you get hacked, it's when. And then the question is, how do you handle it? And I think that is what Tieto is focusing every effort they can out at. Yeah, we were target for one of the most advanced and one of the most damaging attacks in Swedish history so far. Can we rebuild from this in the best possible way? Because I do think that will benefit them in the long run. But speaking of that, and before we head over to other things, have you heard about Moab, the mother of all breaches? And we won't stay there for long, but someone has compiled a list. Let's call it a list for now. I think it's 15,700 filing cabinets in size of leaked credentials from multiple platforms. 26 billion credentials in total is now roaming wild on the internet. That is a lot. But the upside is that these are not new breaches. It's all old breaches. But it also, again, emphasizes you can't trust your password alone. Because if your password is in this breach, you will most definitely be targeted. And if you don't have multi-factor authentication, then you have a problem. So again, unique passwords, multi-factor authentication, and keep track on your credentials using some kind of dark web monitoring tool that's available from multiple vendors. And be prepared to change your password when needed, not on a regular cadence.
Agreed.
So I think both of these, the Tietoevry news, it's kind of makes you think, because there are multiple similar kinds of companies out there. It's kind of one of these if it can happen to them, it can definitely happen to all these other companies as well.
Yes.
I think most are trying to do things according to best practices and so forth. Of course, there might be something that could be overlooked, etc. But it's just, just brings that to the point, like, ah, yes. And also, even this other breach, though it is very different in nature, it's like, yeah, you're going to get breached at some point. All these companies have gotten breached at some point. So it's going to happen.
Indeed. So it's been a fairly quiet couple of weeks, and parts of that is because that Microsoft decided not to do a January blog and of new things in Fabric and Power BI, but more looking back on 2023. That blog post is not out yet, so again, it's kind of quiet, but they're not sitting on their haunches either. They're working tirelessly with the Fabric Community Conference. And that is going to be an interesting experience. I'm looking forward to coming back and having a conversation about it. But there is a way to get a discount. Since I'm a speaker, there's a way to get a discount, and that's to use my surname, Arvidsson, and tack on 100. Arvidsson 100 is going to give you a $100 discount. So there's no point in paying full price going to Las Vegas. I'm pretty sure that you can find other ways to use those $100 in Vegas. But there are a couple of other things that I wanted to bring up. One is Kurt Bueller, a good friend of ours. He wrote I hesitate to call it a blog post because his blog posts are works of art. The man brings out so many interesting ideas. And this was penned on January the 4th. And it is called The Quality Problem, a call to arms. And his first tagline is, let's make 2024 a year where things work. And a call to arms to put quality first in data and analytics. It's a beautiful idea. I absolutely love it, and I hope that people read this. It's also a pipe dream that anyone who's worked for more than 10 minutes in this industry can attest to, but we need to be better. We need to stop running and start looking after what are we doing. We are so focused on getting stuff out the door quickly, we'll fix it in post, has sort of kind of become a staple in the data industry. And it is fiendishly difficult to write unit tests on data, but it can be done through the use of data ops. And data ops, it's not about the fanciest tool you can find and buy and implement and boom, you have data ops and everything is fine. No, it's the boring stuff. It's processes. It's all those things. But this is a great blog post. It's full of amazing pictures and so much interesting text.
And it's not the tools? Really?
I'm sorry, Haney. It's not about the tools. It's the processes.
Oh, no.
It's all about that Haney needs to do more stand-up meetings. That's what data ops is about.
Oh, we have, again, like, I look forward to a certain recording because that will be so much fun.
And the recording that Simon is referring to is the Needham in Tech Live at SQL Bits, where we will be discussing the ins and outs and the pros and cons of processes, DevOps, DataOps, and whatever ops you can come up with. So please, if you have thoughts, opinions, join us and let's have a conversation, because it's not anything but a clear cut answer and one truth. Quite the opposite. It's going to be wild is a good word.
But it's going to be quality.
Quality wild, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or wildly qualitative.
Quality wild, that sounds like a author from the 1700s. Quality wild. I think that would be my pseudonym.
Okay. That brings us
I'm so confused.
to a really, really interesting blog post by Ed Oldham at Advancing Analytics. So I've done some work with Fabric and notebooks and concurrency. And when I say I've done some work, I have banged my head against the wall. I have done a lot of screaming and really didn't find my way out of that maze. But it turns out that Ed has done much more banging of heads, much more screaming, and produced much more results. So running notebooks in Fabric is not hard. Running notebooks in parallel is difficult. And there are so many interesting error messages you're going to find. And it turns out that running this in Synapse behaves quite differently from running it in Fabric, because in Fabric, you're paying for a capacity. You have a number of Fabric capacity units, CUs. And depending on the number of CUs that you buy, depending on the Fabric capacity SKU, you get a varying number of max V cores. And here's the kicker, varying Q limits. Meaning that you cannot kick off a 10 session concurrent job on an F2 because you only have a limit of 4. And that limit is lower than you might think. It's 4 for F2 and F4, and then it goes up with the capacity SKU. So if you have an F32, well, you have a limit queue limit of 32. That does not mean that it is a good idea to run 32 concurrent Spark sessions, but that may be neither here nor there. So he's done a lot of work and explained how to think about you look at vCores in a node, the number of nodes in a pool, degrees of parallelism, all those things. It's a great blog post. You should absolutely check it out if you're into the Fabric and notebook Spark running space. And that was what I had.
Then I guess it is on to me, where I actually have some news items.
But oh, and behold, in the news episode.
Yes. But I have to say, it seemed a little quiet to me as well, this beginning of the year. So I had to go back to API management, of all things.
I was just going to point that out. Haney has a very special relationship to API management. She is a very difficult person to annoy and make frustrated. I have never seen her so close to losing her marbles, like the one time in Stockholm where she was considering murder after having worked with the API management. So please talk to us about API management.
Yes. Yes, I will be the one to convince you it is amazing, as long as it works and you don't have to do any weird DevOps dynamic type of configurations, then it's fine if you can more leave it alone and not poke it all the time. But anyways, maybe it has improved. I have not now worked with it in a few bits, so take this with a grain of salt. But anyways, there are some new capabilities in API management, and we have something called a circuit breaker in public preview. And what this means is that you have kind of a tripwire that is behind your API management gateway and your backend that you can kind of trigger based on certain conditions, so that then your backend doesn't get flooded, for example. So for example, if you could set a percentage of failures, that if that threshold goes over, then it won't actually send your requests to the backend anymore, so that it doesn't just keep flooding that with the failures and failures and failures and so forth. So there is many different kind of criteria that you can have in this to create the circuit breaker for your backend.
Does it reset automatically, or is it tripped and then someone needs to go in and poke it? I'm guessing you could set it up for both, but it's a simple and really interesting piece of kit.
Exactly.
But would you say that the main use case is it, because my first thought were security, since you said tripwire, but is it more in terms of from a programmatic point of view, if you do something wrong or if something else breaks?
I think it's for both. It's not like more for one or the other, but it can definitely be used for both, in my opinion. Mm. Then there is like another similar small capability that has come in that is also neat, is that you have a load balancer that you can create in Azure API Management that then, so that you can have like multiple backends for your one API and then a load balancer that then balances out the load between those backends. So this could be, for example, in cases where you do have like two backends implementing the same API capability, and they could even be distributed, for example, between locations or something like that. And of course, this would come in handy also when you're doing upgrades or something like that. So you can shift the load to just one backend, then do the upgrade, and then shift it back there and do the upgrade on the other one and so forth. So also very kind of looks like a small new feature, but actually quite interesting and convenient, I would say. And then the last item that I have, and I think we have for this episode, is Azure Virtual Network Encryption.
That sounds great.
Wait, what?
Yes. Azure Virtual Network Encryption. And you might think, like, wasn't traffic within Azure Virtual Networks already encrypted? And it is. So whenever your traffic moves in your virtual network, it moves, of course, physically also somewhere in data centers, and it moves between physical links. And so the type of encryption that is on by default works on this physical level. So if anyone here has read about the OSI model or knows that very well, this is on the data link layer, so level 2. When I started in this field, one of the first books I read was like a brick-sized book on the OSI model. It was a very interesting read. So
what's even more fun is that you're the only person I've ever heard refer to it as the OSI, because everybody else says the OSI model. But
well, I think that's like, in Finnish, we would say OSI. So yeah, that's...
Oh, so it's the Aussie model.
Yes.
That's Australian.
OSI model.
So silly. No. OSI model, I mean. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
It's only the old person. It's the old person that knows how things actually work below the lead and all of that, that have arguments.
Exactly.
I didn't react on it at all.
Yes.
I understood.
All right. But yeah, this new capability, we are still in the encryption here. This works on the layer between when you have your networking going or your traffic going between virtual machines or virtual machine scale sets. So it does not work on the physical level, but actually on the traffic, like between the virtual machines themselves.
So layer 3 or layer 4?
I couldn't find the factual part of that. Actually, I was trying to dig for it, but I believe it is layer 4, actually, when I was thinking about it. But this is not 100% sure. It's one of those, I believe. But it is more a little bit higher level. So it will ensure that your networking will remain secured even between your virtual machine hosts, even if your virtual machine, the other end of the communication, would be even outside of Azure.
Huh.
I really like this, and I'm reading the blog post. So a few things that you might want to provide input on. First and foremost, there are limited SKUs that can use this. So I assume it has something to do with the actual hardware that supports these SKUs, which is kind of interesting because it's some kind of network card that does something. The other thing is the regions where it's GA already, because it's already GA in UK South, Swiss North. That was not a surprise at all that the Swiss would like to have this, and West Central US. So I do see that this would be valuable for a lot of organizations, but based on the data centers, I'm guessing that financial services might have been interested in this.
It does seem that way, looking at the list. I believe so too. But there is also the public preview is currently mainly in the US. So for example, for us in Europe, it's not really, you know, relevant quite at this time yet. So we'll see what kind of time frame that would be.
I would love to find someone to talk to about the perceived use cases for this.
That would be great, actually.
Let's dig around and see who we can corner and get into one of the episodes, because I think that would be super interesting to talk network security inside of Azure, especially in the light of the hack of Teatro Evry.
One correction I want to make, because I think I phrased it a little wrong. So this is for traffic between your virtual machines that are in either your Azure virtual network or Pure networks. And it can be regionally or globally. So I think I said, even if your virtual machine is not in Azure, when I meant to say not in the same region. So
yeah.
Just to make sure, I think I spoke wrong. I think that's the end for our news items today.
It's not only the end of the news items, but it's also the end of the episode. Time flies when you're having fun, as we keep having fun. And as always, there's not so much news. We'll sort it. Don't worry. We'll talk for half an hour.
About something.
Always. Yeah. So we'll be back in a week. And next week, we have a really interesting interview with Eugene Meidinger. So you absolutely do want to miss that. Do not want to miss that. And also,
nice one.
There will be a discount code in that episode. Mm-hmm. So for sure, if you're in the market for top-notch Power BI performance tuning stuff, listen for the discount code in the next episode. And until next time, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Knee Deep in Tech. Knee Deep in Tech is a bi-weekly technology podcast hosted by Alexander Arvidsson, Simon Binder, and Heini Hilmarinen. If you have any feedback, questions, or would like to be part of an episode, please reach out to us on social media or via email at podcast@kneedeepintech.com.